You have all been doing a very wonderful thing with these healing meditations. The first healing meditation we did was 2 weeks ago when we tried to help Devarshi, who was in the intensive care unit in the hospital. Well, that helped him very much, and he is thanking you all very much for that. And last week, Vajrapriya's aunt in Moscow, who was in very serious condition, she was saying dying from cancer, had a wonderful experience. I am not exactly sure how this happened, but she left the hospital and went home. And when I heard this, I was like, actually stunned. And I actually couldn't speak for about a half an hour afterwards. I was just very, very happy at what all of you have done. Now, of course, I hope that it lasts for her, but there was an immediate and enormous result. And Vajra is sending you all a nice rose as thanks. Now, since these wonderful results have been coming, I've been getting all kinds of requests for healings that we should all do on Saturday. So the list is getting quite long. And the latest request for today is from the dean of Kepler College, where Kamala is right now in Seattle. They're both there right now at a seminar. And they are requesting healing for her kidneys because somehow or another her kidneys are failing, which is a very serious situation. So today I would ask you all to again offer your intense and focused concentration to help heal this lady. It seems to me that when we offer healing like this, it is such a beautiful act of unconditional love and service to others that it benefits us in ways we cannot understand. I mean, sometimes people might think that, that person over there is insignificant and it doesn't matter what we do for them anyway and we're not getting paid anything. Why should we bother? But if you're that person and you receive such a healing of such a massive energy from so many hundreds of people all around the world, you just cry in thankfulness. And when you see such a thing, you don't care about any reward. You just like to just do it. It's just so much, it's so blissful to do such a thing. I remember, I don't know if I told you this, that when I had gone to the hospital to see Devarshi after he came out of his coma, and I told him what you had all done, he simply started crying uncontrollably and said, "They did that for me?" And I said, "Of course." He was saying he didn't deserve to be loved like that, and I said, "Of course he did." So I hope that we can all count on our support for any one of us who is in that situation and needs help someday, that we'll all be there to support ourselves, to support us. You know, there's nothing better in this world than to have friends who are there for you when you need them. Anyway, I just want to thank you again for all of this, and let's just see if week after week we can make our energies more and more powerful and actually do something wonderful for people of this world. I remember about maybe it was 5 years ago, 4 years ago, we did a meditation for helping the war in Chechnya, if you remember that. And I still remember that. There was about 500 of us doing it there in that temple room in St. Petersburg. And I do know that a few months later, the severity of the war was greatly reduced. So I think that we can also become part of helping the world in a global way as well. I would like to do the format of we do one meditation for the sake of some individual and we do one meditation for the sake of a community or even the whole world. I have seen in my own life that whenever I do a healing for somebody else, immediately I feel better because all of that wonderful energy is just flowing through me to the person and it is cleansing me and affecting me in a very positive way. And don't forget that two of the most important participants in this healing meditations are Gornatai, who are right there in St. Petersburg and who are listening to this in the same way as all of you. And if they want to add their beautiful energy to things, everything will go very nicely. So last week we had the format of doing some kind of discussion, and then we did a healing meditation for a person, and then we had some questions and answers. And Kamala Mulla brought up the point that he thought that the questions and answers would be much more interesting if people felt they could say what they really wanted to say. Now, I'm not exactly sure what you really want to say, but I don't mind a lively discussion. You can disagree or say whatever you want. That's fine with me. If everything is always very sweet and sugary, it gets boring too. But you don't have to invent conflict. There's enough conflict in the world. But if there's really something you wish to discuss that seems to be contrary to what's going on, please do so. Don't worry. And don't worry, you can also join the forums in HariMedia.net, and we can have some very free kind of discussions. It's easy to register. It takes about 10 seconds. Sergei is asking me, can we help Bhakti Tirtha Swami, who's dying from cancer? I have thought about that. I don't know if you know it, but he's in very advanced stages of cancer. He has maybe 1 week, 2 weeks to live. There's two reasons why I didn't want to do that. The first reason is that his physical body is extremely finished, and I don't think that, unless we, of course, had supernatural powers beyond any that I've ever heard of, he can be saved at this point by some intervention. But even that's not the most important consideration, because everybody does well with nice healing energy. The most important consideration is that these healings we do for people, we do only with the permission and request of these people. In other words, you don't want to do a healing for somebody who doesn't really want it. And even more importantly, when there are so many people focusing their healing energies in different ways on a person, you can really screw a person up more when it becomes incompatibly mixed. He has hundreds of people all over the world working on him. It's like when you have 20 people cooking in the same pot. You know, it makes a big mess. And this is the main reason why I don't think it's good for, you know, some 200-something or more people all of a sudden sending more energies into that pot. I think it could be more dangerous. The best thing when we do a healing for somebody is actually that they're asleep. Then they're not in the way at all. And that nobody else is doing anything at that time. Otherwise, it becomes a conflict. Either that or they're just completely open to the healing. So for these different reasons, I think that we will not participate in trying to offer healing to Bhakti Tirtha Swami unless he specifically asks for it and nobody else is doing it at that time. And if that situation arises, I will be the first one to let you know about it. You know, Manojava was writing to me just a few days ago asking about requesting the help of higher authorities or the demigods in healing work. And I wrote some method about how to do that, but the most important point of all is related to what we just said. Sometimes people have the idea that you do like some sacrifice to make a connection with some demigod. It's a one-way street, basically. I pick some deva, I do some method, I give some offering, and I focus on that deva, and I'm just waiting for that deva to finally cave in and say, okay. But the rule is, whenever you do a yajna, whenever you do a sacrifice, whenever you request assistance, is that it has to be a two-way street. This two-way street means the first thing you do is you request permission to approach. Because there are many factors involved here. For example, number one, is the person you are trying to approach, that means if you're trying to approach somebody, is that person an appropriate person to approach? Would that deva be someone interested or someone accustomed to performing healing work? After all the devas have different functions. So you don't function in the sense that things that they do that are according to their characteristics. So you wouldn't want to approach somebody who has a totally different characteristic to do some healing work. They can all do it, of course. But that's not necessarily the best request to make of any particular deva. So you do a little research. You find out those who might be most inclined to your request. And the first thing you do is you ask them, may I approach you with this request? Would you like to cooperate with me and assist me to perform this service for others? And if the answer is yes, you move forward, closer. If the answer is no, you don't, you back off. It is very important that this is a voluntary reciprocal relationship. And sometimes people are not aware of this and it creates friction. Whenever you have expectations that cannot be fulfilled, you become disappointed and frustrated. So to reduce this possibility, one should understand the nature of the personalities one is trying to connect to. But you can also approach a deva and say, may I connect you for this? And if you get a no response, you can always ask, who do you recommend I approach? And interestingly enough, if you are in the proper mood, if you have a pure heart, in other words, you just wish to be of service, and you call for help, the help will come just as you need it. And you will be able to feel that help is appropriate for you. It will be a very easy thing to feel. So it is a question of just trusting your guides, trusting those devas who have an eye on you. And when you wish to be of service to others, to simply allow that connection to become more powerful, so that you become more aware of it for that particular moment. And this brings me directly into the subject that I wish to speak about today, about reality. Now, reality is a little word, but it has such enormous implications when you are to speak about it. First of all, reality is totally subjective. It's as I see it from my perspective. From my perspective, I can see it in hundreds and hundreds of different ways. Now, a scientist will see reality in a way that is different from a philosopher, sometimes. A follower of some religious sect will see it differently than an atheist. A child will see it differently than an adult, but all will see it differently than the very old. Even men and women see reality differently. Animals see it differently than humans. Reality according to crystals, reality according to plants, reality according to the demigods. It's all different according to our perception of it. The universe or universes are vast. And to understand what is an absolute in all of this is very difficult. And on top of that, everything is changing all the time. Even you think you may understand a piece of reality right now, but even one moment from now, it has changed. Certainly there is space, which is measured by physical dimensions. But then there is also time. That physical dimension at this time is different than the physical dimension at that time. But then there are also other ways of understanding this physical dimension. Just take, for example, a color. A color is very much a part of this physical dimension. It is made up by different chemical combinations which create a specific frequency of light that I perceive. Now, even though the colors are made of the same chemicals for everybody, due to my eyes, I will see a particular color differently than you will see. That personality who's perceiving, who's receiving this stimulus, interprets it in his own particular way. Then again, you have the situation where the effect of that color on me is different than the effect of that color on you. So the reality changes in its density according to my particular energy and the way that energy is expressing itself emotionally or psychically. Now, just consider this universal space that we live in. Even within ourselves, our reality has so much more depth than can be perceived directly by another. The depths of our psyche, for instance, sometimes can go so deep. Our thoughts, our analysis, our doubts, our desires, the depths of our emotions, the depths of our spiritual energy. Now, these things are not actually dependent on this physical form. I'm actually not dependent on my physical form for the expressions of my spiritual, emotional, or psychic energies. Rather, this physical form is the interface, is the vehicle, is the medium by which these most essential elements of me are visible to everyone else. Now consider beings who are not bound to this particular physical form. They are in other forms of other arrangements, but they still have their psychic energies, their emotional energies, their spiritual energies. It is these energies which give the capacity for expression, for communication, for reciprocation. When you are psychically aware, when you are emotionally aware, in other words, when you are energetically aware, you no longer are bound to communication only with other physically embodied personalities. Factually, the communications you may have no longer have any limits. You can communicate with anybody who wishes to communicate with you, because the most essential aspect of the communication is the vehicle. And that vehicle is available to you through your own psyche, through your own emotion, through your own spiritual energy. And this is really how reality takes place. Of course, this is the reality that I am focusing in on out of the whole unlimited aspect of elements available to every personality. And the only limitation you have in your capacity to communicate is your actually the sensitivity, the awareness of how you actually do communicate. Two examples I'd like to just show to make a contrast, and then I want to get really into the point of the connections. The first example is when you just speak to somebody, hello, how are you, how's things, how's business, blah, blah, blah. This is blah, blah conversation, not very deep. This kind of communication has no depth to it. It doesn't affect us very much. Then there's communication which is on the level of the heart, communication where there's actually the energy involved. There's some seriousness to it because I feel about what I'm doing. It's a totally different quality. We perceive it in a totally different way, and it is much more significant. And more importantly, it is much more powerful, and we take it much more seriously. Now, when you're trying to communicate with other personalities, let's say for healing work or for your own personal education or for help, it is done on that level where there's a significant energetic transfer of expression. And all you need to do to establish such a pathway of communication is to simply place your consciousness on that form of expression. That is why when we do these meditations, especially the ones we've done lately, we are actually strengthening our capacity to tune to these higher personalities' wavelengths. Now, for those of you who have been doing the meditations for the last 5 or 6 or 7 years, you know that you can do a lot of things with these meditations. But recently we have been starting to utilize the Kundalini energy to make actually the connection between the physical body, the physical energy, and the power which can project outwards our spiritual force. Because what it does, it just enlivens the nervous system to such a degree that the power you utilize, the energy you utilize, is very focused and very strong. And if you notice the chakras we have been using, we have been using the Manipura chakra, the Vishuddhi chakra, and the Ajna chakra. These are the centers of most intense energy which are used for communication with the higher beings. We have been using the Sahasrara chakra to bring down beautiful energies into ourselves, to fill ourselves up with this energy that is available in the universe. We have been bringing up the energy through the Muladhara chakra, through the root chakra, to bring up from Mother Earth all that beautiful grounding energy to just fill us like a tree would be flourishing in contact with the earth. And the other chakras have their function, but when we are speaking about developing our capacities to perceive, we have been using the Ajna chakra and developing the third eye communication just below that to develop the triscopic vision so that we can see reality more closely to the way it is seen in the higher realms. Because it is this kind of a vision which gives one a balanced understanding and perception of the reality that is around us. And today we're going to, with that triscopic vision, we're going to shift the balance from the normal strength package of eyes to the one which is not so normal. I'll explain that later. That's a little complex. For example, we all know from the former meditations which side of our body, the male side or the female side, which is stronger in us. And when we do the meditation on the third eye, where we don't want that, we don't want to push out energy, we don't want to pull in energy, we just want to just be neutral with it, just be aware of it, we usually do it from the side which is our powerful side. So let's say if you're a male and you have the right side powerful, it'll be the right eye and the third eye connected. But when you consciously shift the focus to the other eye, to the other side, and you use that as your basis upon which to look, all of a sudden things just open up like a flower in the morning. And then the triscopic vision really starts to develop that depth, which is what we're looking for. Now when we utilize the Kundalini energy and we bring it up to these areas, we are giving enormous power to our perception, enormous power to our expression of our spiritual energy. And when we move that power in circular forms, what we are doing is we are learning how to project and receive that energy at our control. So we've already done all of this, and this is very, very powerful. I'm not even sure if you're really connected yet with the power of this, but it is so powerful. You can do anything you want once you've got mastery over these simple little techniques. Of course, they're not so simple, but they are not difficult things to do. Now, we are all theists. We all wish to have connection to the Supreme. We all wish to have contact with Radha and Krishna, Gaur-Nitai, or God, however you want to speak about the Supreme. And we are aware of our internal desire to be of service. We wish to be of service because it is the nature of spirit to give in love unconditionally. This is also how Radha and Krishna are doing. They're giving in love unconditionally to us, regardless of our position, good or bad. So this spiritual essence, which we are, drives us to understand more about the connection between the Supreme and ourselves. And to this end, we have created an usness between ourselves and the deities in St. Petersburg and some of the programs, between ourselves and the Supreme. I'm reviewing here. Now, the reason I'm explaining this again is because I'm talking about reality, and I'm talking about a universal reality here. Just consider the universe as an energy ball in the hands of Srimati Radha, Lord Shri Krishna. You know, in Qigong, when one is creating energy balls with the hands, one learns to feel them. One learns how to throw the ball back and forth between the palms of the hands, to feel the motion of the energy. Because feeling that energy there is like essential for understanding how to use it. So I see in my reality, of course, it's my own subjective reality, I see this universe as an energy ball in the hands of the Supreme. So my particular meditation is that this energy universe is in the hands of Radha and Krishna, who are healing it with their energy. So when I try to understand reality, I try to see it from that point of view. And the reason I do it is because I would rather walk in the forest and see the beautiful trees and the leaves and not look at the junk on the ground or the disturbing aspects. I have no problem looking at the dirt or the paper or the refuse or the disturbing aspects. I can do it as well as anyone. And I don't mind cleaning things up either. But there are some occasions when that is valuable to do and some occasions when that becomes an annoyance. When I'm working on my own personal evolution, I am mainly concerned with my experiences of the positive, the great, the things that help me to grow. Just like I don't want to meditate on my uselessness, my fallenness, my negative qualities. That just keeps me absorbed in myself. I want to see the positive. I want to look towards the Supreme. I want to see the good within me that can connect to the Supreme. I want to concentrate on that qualitative oneness, not the differences which are keeping me in my unevolved situation. So I am also mainly concerned with experiencing in my own meditation that healing energy, that positive energy, that fundamental supportive energy of Radha and Krishna. Just like when we do these meditations, we bring down this healing energy. We bring it down within ourselves with different colors, like with crystal colors or beautiful golden colors. We accept this energy. It gives us power. Now, we see that energy in that particular way, but we feel it very strongly. It has a density to it. Now, another personality, let's say some deva, would perhaps perceive that energy in a very different way, in its details, in what actually it is made up of, its specific personality. And that is really the difference between the different personalities, how we perceive. So now, in my meditation, I see the hands of the Supreme around this universe, and that energy flowing throughout every portion of this universal creation, down to every cell, every tiny little subatomic piece, pervading every part of this world. And when I meditate like that, I am actually floating on that energy. And it is such a, shall we say, it feels so much better for me, according to who I am, than to be floating on another energy, some hybrid energy as a creation of this material mixture. The same things, the same ingredients, the same elements transform according to the energy that you see pervading them, according to the way you tune your perception. After all, this is just part of the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna is saying that everything is pervaded by Him. He is in everything. But when you can feel it, when you feel it, it's not just a thought. It's not just a philosophy you have to believe. It's something you live in every moment. And thus reality transforms. And that's another reason why I think these healings, these meditations we do are so important, because they give us the direct capacity to experience this very thing. So I just thought I'd speak about that a little bit. And at this point, I think we can take a little 5-minute break. Not very long. We come back at, let's say 5 minutes. And then I'd like to do a healing meditation for that lady. But I will also do it by tuning our energies more, especially with this triscopic vision, as we spoke about, using that kundalini force to drive it, so that it will be an increase of our own energies for the sake of another. And after that, we will have our question and answer kind of session, discussion. And I hope that the technical problems we had this week will not repeat. At least the person setting up the server, we have more of a direct connection now because we switched over totally to the American server for videos. And I would like to thank very much Mahabhuta in Germany and Devendra in France for their donations. They have been helping to pay for that server, and I thank them again for all on behalf of all of us. And again, we will have the questions after this meditation, which will be after a 5-minute break. And I hope now to play a little of the bhajan music in the meantime. And then we will start after that. So you can all take a break now. And I've got to create a new playlist if I can figure out how to do that. Are we there? Mahashaya? Hi. No, nothing to be sorry about. Are we all there? Ready to go? We lost everybody in Samvartika's place, but anyway, that's the breaks. I think you people are becoming very powerful. And it's kind of like when you grab onto an electric wire, you can't let go and you got all this. So it takes a while to recover from all of that. there's questions here from Argentina. I can try to cut and paste that into your messenger, Mahashaya, so you can... No, I have to do it in English anyway. He's asking a question, which I can paraphrase as... his question includes trying to help others, but... the problem comes when the other person doesn't want to be helped. First of all, it is, if you ever want to do something for somebody, there are gifts which anybody would like, and then there are some which are specific to that person. So it's important, it's actually very important, to find out what that person wants. And even if that person wants nothing, to respect that. Being sensitive to the needs of others is the first requirement to do things for service to others. Now, when it comes to help, the word help is subject to definition. One has to say, well, what is it that you're trying to do? Let's say you're trying to give somebody some advice to help them or some psychological assistance. To help them, what you think is a help. I mean, even if you very sincerely think you're helping the person, but if the other person thinks that's an annoyance and doesn't want it, it's not help from their point of view. It's an annoyance. So getting to understand another is essential before you're able to offer any service of real significance. And that's part of the responsibility of trying to find out about the real needs of another person. Because it's more important just to find out what is needed than to actually give something that you think is needed. Yeah, it's just like, of course, there's another problem. Panchadara is saying that you give a person, you see a person is hungry and need something to eat, and when you give them food, they say they're not hungry, they don't want to eat. But really what you've got in that situation is where that person doesn't want to accept something from you for various reasons. Because often the service we do for others implies things. It demands something from them. It somehow or another creates a situation where they have to be, shall we say, owing something to you. And they don't like that, so they reject it. In this case, there are other factors at work, and you again have to be sensitive to that. You have to be willing to just back off and let time heal things. Kamala Mala, you said that you wanted to have more of a people say what they really think. So, you know, agitate in the room there and see what you can come up with. Go ahead. Masha, you're in charge. Just tell them to talk what they want to say. You know, when I didn't really follow too much about what the Pope did. I'm really sorry about that. I don't really have things to say. I mean, there are certain obvious things, but more than that, I can't give any input into it. You know, like with any person, there's good and there's also bad. And when persons die, we tend to rather more see the good than the bad, and that's fine. What else? Fire sacrifices have energetically a very specific function. The idea is, in a fire yajna, that you invoke Agni or a particular form of Vishnu as that fire. In other words, the fire becomes a deity. So that deity accepts ghee, which is fuel for the fire, and wood, which is fuel for the fire, and grains, which are fuel for the fire and also an offering in the fire. So you are reciprocating with the fire as a personality in a very safe, systematic, and established method of communication. This is very similar to deity worship or any other form where there is a specific, a very specific procedure required, a cultural background, a shastric reference. These are very specific kinds of procedures. We have a very interesting situation that the people very much on the eastern side of Russia are all totally asleep and want to go to sleep. God knows what time it is for them. When you're doing this all around the world, you have this wild situation where some people are completely in the middle of the night and other people are in the early morning, and yet it somehow all works. So, but anyway, back to the fire yajna. If you don't want to have to be bound by various procedures, because if you want to go into that procedural way of doing things, you have to do it all perfectly, because if there's one little mistake, you're out of the procedure and you won't get the same result. Whereas if you just understand what's actually going on, you can create this reciprocal communication in another way, which is not dependent on doing everything perfectly. You can do it in a meditative way with offerings to individual personalities of energetic love, of energetic desire to be of service, of trying to come together and doing something together. And you can therefore try different forms of ceremonial arrangements which tune to those energies which are compatible to you. So the situation is the same as it would be for any group anywhere in the world who has created their own forms of ceremony, their own forms of ritual. They have done it according to the realizations of some who've actually made the connections. And they created it according to their realization. I'm sure you can do it according to yours or according to those who you do it together with when you want to create it. Maybe that wasn't the answer you were looking for, but it's more an answer related to, I would say, the underlying energies which make anything work as compared to things which don't work. Did that help? Because I don't really feel like getting into more details about that.
Did it?
Okay. I got two questions from Samvartika's flat. The first one is, sometimes, are you in this conference? Yeah, you are. Oh, so you must be able to see it. Sometimes we do not allow ourselves to accept help even from someone who we believe loves us. How is it possible to help the situation? Okay, well, there's two ways you can look at this. It's that a person may not want help from some particular person because they don't like that person, or they think there's nothing in it for them. And then there's another case where we just don't accept help because we don't feel within that we're worthy of it. We may not feel ourselves qualified to accept help from others. We may think of ourselves as simply a disturbance in the world. There may be hundreds of reasons why this is so. It could be from our childhood. It could be from our previous lives. It could be from something we think we have done which is so bad that it disqualifies us. But whatever the cause is, there's a very interesting solution to it. To just simply accept the gifts of others. I think that, for example, if there's a, for example, a birthday present given to you, just accept it because the other person wishes to give it to you in love. To reject the love of another in the form of the gift is very insulting. It's uncultured. Learn to accept like that. Learn it. You have to learn this. It's a culture. It's a practice to accept. Be gracious. Bow down to them. No, I don't mean in the obeisances kind of way. I mean like emotionally, and say thank you. And be grateful to the other person. This will cure the problem of not being able to accept. Because when you actually feel grateful, accepting is easy. It's part of the reciprocation of the love. Your gratefulness is your love going to that person. And you are just accepting their love. That is why you are grateful. It's a very good reciprocation. But I think the real solution is to learn why you do not like yourself. Most people have the same problem. They just very low self-esteem. They just don't like themselves. They think they're bad. And this we have been talking about for years now as the main problem. And if I can move, I know that didn't completely answer the question, so I'm not even going to ask, but I'm going to move to the next one. The next question is, if the higher forces want someone to be healed, then what do they need our assistance for? Well, then we could say from the same point of view that why isn't there good weather all the time? Why is there no one on the planet who doesn't starve? Why can't there just be a finish to all disease? Why can't there be peace? Why stop by saying the higher authorities want people to be healed? Higher authorities also want peace. They also want love everywhere. They also want everyone to be fed and comfortable. And they certainly don't need us to create that situation. That's the same logic. But actually, it's not so. Because all of us down here are creating opposite situations. We are doing business in such a way that some people starve and some people throw away food. We are eating things and taking things and doing things that make us sick. So for them to interfere in our lives and change everything means that we are going to have to live their lives, not our lives. The rule of a highly involved consciousness is not to interfere in another living being's free will, but to rather render service when there is a request for it to be done. So unless we make the connections, the higher forces are not going to interfere. And as I said in the very beginning, the healing we do here is also for ourselves. It's not like we just put a sign up in the backyard that says, okay, heal my mother now, she's sick, boom. And we we just walk away saying, well, the order has been placed to the higher authority, so I can go play ping pong. So that's very, not only impersonal, it's impertinent, it's rude. What really is happening is we want something to happen, and we call out to them to ask them to help us do what we wish to do. So they reciprocate with us. So actually, we make an us with them to do something that we together wish to do. But that can only be done when all the parties wish to do it. I suppose that does answer that question, does it? I'm asking. Yeah, I got a question here from Mihail, so that's next, but you can write it. Does that answer the question? I'm watching you there in Sambhartika's place. Say yes or no. Yes, it does. Thank you. Okay. Mihail says, oh, yeah, questions are pouring in. Okay, hang on. How can the all that exists have form? Go ahead. Or how can the form of the deities relate with the all that exists? Or how the form of the deities does relate with the all that exists? Can this be answered logically? Form is a question. A form is a word that has to be defined, first of all. For instance, let's say I live in three-dimensional space and you're looking at me. So what you look at is my three-dimensional physically defined form. Now, there are other forms which are not definable according to their cellular makeup. And we discussed this before. The way I communicate, the sound vibration itself, which is not necessarily connected to my mouth. For example, if you're listening only, this is a form. It has a tonality. It has a melody. It has a certain frequency that is specific to it. And on top of that, the form of my words fit into various concepts. These concepts exist independently of my cellular form. There's also the form of my emotional expressions. Now, I'm just an ordinary person here living in this earth. Now, you have defined that personality which you have called the all that exists. You have some idea about the all that exists. Just by giving that very greatest personality, or shall we say, even not personality, you've said it's the all that exists. In other words, that formless greatness is the all that exists, and that's all there is to it. That's a definition that you've given. Since you've chosen to define the all-pervading energy as the all that exists, you then have trouble with form because of your definition. In other words, the problem is a product, to some extent, in the way in which you've chosen to define that existence of all existence. You could just as well define it in some other way and have other forms of problems. For example, I chose to define the way in which I have said the Supreme, a word I've chosen to use, as offering the healing energy into this universe through the hands. That was my chosen way of defining. In other words, there's a form behind or as a source of a particular set of energy within this universe. I just chose to define it like that. You can define, if you like, that everything just is everywhere, and the sum total of all of that is the greatest. You can also choose to say, from a very different point of view, all that exists is everywhere, and there is no sum total of it. It's just its little part here and there, everything affecting each other, and that's just the way it is. You can also choose to define that there is a person or persons who are within all that exists, yet who are the source of all that exists, yet all that exists has always existed. So it is one big package. You can choose to define everything just as you like, and however you choose to define it, you have different problems with form or not with form. Some people get around this whole problem by saying nothing exists. There's only nothingness. All this form doesn't exist either. But there are very few. Mainly what they say is that, okay, it exists, but it's not important. This is not what's important. I see it, it's here, but this is illusory because my attachment to it is what gives it importance and thus which gives it its permanence. But it's not permanent. Whether or not the all that exists has form or not form or is there or is not there, basically it belongs to your belief. A scientist can't say it's there or not there. A religionist can't say it's there or not there because everything is way beyond us. It basically boils down to your belief, and your belief is based on the experiences you've had, either scientific, logical, or emotional, or religious, or practical from seeing what happens. Personally, I've never really battled too much with this. I don't really bother with it. It's just something fun to talk about. I look at the deities, let's say there in St. Petersburg where this question came from. I see Gornatai. And I see, I feel their energy. I feel their love. It's practical to me. It's real to me. It's not an idea that I have. It's an experience that I have that I cannot duplicate in other places except before deities. I mean, psychology is also a science, and other things are also science, but they're not basically boiling down to mathematical truths. They're also experiential truths. There are medical drugs which work, but nobody really knows why. For example, we know about various forces in nature, but exactly why it's so, there are many ideas, but not really fact. But we have experiences. I have experience with deities. I feel their reciprocation. I feel the effect they have on me. I hear their communication. And I tune to them as being what they are. And I'm fully happy with that. I don't need them to be anything else. I don't need them to be the supreme. I'm quite happy with them just as they are. I suppose it helps that I believe, yes, Lord Chaitanya is the combination of Radha Krishna. Yes, I believe that Radha Krishna are the all-pervading energies of everything who also have their own form with which they reciprocate with me. Yes, I believe that. And I believe it and I experience it and I feel good about it and I get proof of it in my daily life. Logic is a lot of belief too. And I know that everybody likes to believe that logic is an absolute thing, but it's not. I know things that follow laws on this planet. When you go out into outer space, these laws are no longer functioning. For example, in the way things combine and the way elements exist. That's why they're creating new things in space when they go out there. Before quantum physics existed, Newtonian physics was absolutely logical and rational, and that just was the explanation for everything for certain persons. So, you know, logic, okay, I can't answer that logically. I can't logically analyze the all that exists. I can talk about it. We can discuss it. But you use the word answer. Answer as in, this is what is. I can't do that. For somebody who wants to believe a certain kind of answer, I could answer it. I would just aim my answer to their belief. But to be detached, and to see everything in a neutral way, and to come up with a logical analysis of every aspect of this creation, not possible for me. I can't do that. I can try. I mean, I gave an attempt to try. I mean, I can't go on for hours about this, but ultimately, my point is, it very much depends on your belief system and the experiences you have within your belief system. And I experience the deities reciprocating with me like that. And therefore, the deities have importance to me as being the Supreme, the way the Supreme relates with me from that point of view. So I'm sorry I can't give maybe a more satisfying answer, but I gave what I can give. Okay? What did he say? Okay. What do you mean by essential? Do you mean that it transforms the quality of the deities if they're not? Okay, but okay, then let me take it from another point of view. There are deities, let's say, of Ganesh, of Saraswati, of Lakshmi, of Hanuman, of Lord Shiva, Goddess Parvati, who we would not say are the all that exists. Yet, attaching to them, connecting to them, reciprocating to them is so spiritually satisfying, at least to me, that I don't care. I'm so happy connecting with Lord Shiva and Goddess Parvati. For example, I don't question their qualifications. It's not like they have to be a card-carrying supreme for me to appreciate them as people. I'm just happy with them for what they are, for how they reciprocate with me. So when it comes to people, wherever they may be, whether they're sitting in front of me, or they're on the altar, or they are in the highest abodes, or wherever, all that counts is the connection, the love, the reciprocation. I don't need God to part the waves in the ocean. I don't need God to transform everything in an instant for me to, with a lightning flash and smoke, for me to believe, or for me to experience, or for me to appreciate the presence of God. And sometimes I can appreciate the all that exists in the smile of a child. I personally see like that. That's the way I perceive. I just perceive the people, that's all. I see Gaur-Nitai as people. I see Lord Shiva, Goddess Parvati as people. I see the deities as people. People I love. People I like to talk with. People who talk with me. People who love me. It's easier, it's more pleasant, and it's more practical than trying to see them as the all that exists. I mean, that is really going to give me a headache if I got to go before Gaur-Nitai and I'm like, before the all that exists. Wahoo! Where do I go from here? I mean, I would be like shaking. I'm in front of the all that exists. I couldn't handle it. I'm in front of Gaur-Nitai. It's easy. It's great. It's for me. It makes more sense. I can love Gaur-Nitai. I can't love the all that exists in the same way. I don't think so anyway. I haven't met the all that exists in that way. How is that? Okay. Whew, good. I got another question here. If you're on the level of the body. Wait a minute. Hang on. Let me see if I can understand this. Sorry, I don't understand that question. Okay, let me just tell this person. I mean, I have a vague idea what you're trying to say here. Maybe you're trying to say that if you're on the level of the body and another person is on the level of their body, I mean, I suppose you mean by consciousness, that you think that only a person who's on the same level as you can help you. So therefore you need a personal presence. I don't get it, sorry. You can write me. Anything else you wanted to write me from St. Peter? You want to tell me or what? Write me or what? Okay, go ahead. Yeah, it's really hard. Sometimes when I have to talk and write at the same time, it's really complex. You're writing one thing and talking another. You get your brain sometimes gets schizophrenic. But go ahead, tell me. Okay, Russian. By the way, this will be the last question because it's already 2:30. And I mean, I'm starving to death, and I have one little doggy here who's crawling my leg here and says, enough of this talking into these screens. Can you imagine from a dog's point of view? I mean, he's looking at me, and I'm talking into a screen. He must think I'm totally nuts. He just gives up. He says, he talks into screens on Saturday. What's wrong with this guy? I forgot the question. What was the question? Not intention. So intention is a very interesting power because Intention gives the power to what you're doing. For example, when you say something without intention, you say it with intention. I've given this example before. The intention is the power behind the words. Intention is the focusing, the harmonization of all of the energies available to you for a particular action. In other words, it is the way in which you gather together all of the forces of that are behind an action and put them all marching in the same direction. It also means to act from the platform of consciousness, where you're responsible for what you do because you've intended it to happen in that way, or to intended it to work in that way. So it's basically speaking the organizing force in an evolved life. To do things with intention means that we organize all of the different factors, the different elements, the different facilities in life, and place them according to our will. Like we do it when we intend on doing a healing for somebody, or we intend on doing a meditation in a particular way. Yes, I'm trying to answer the question of Sergei here. According to what I understand, I would say that yes, if you need a gross physical action to assist you, people who are in the gross physical world are most suited to help you. But those who are in, shall we say, more energetically powerful bodies, not necessarily physical, they have the capacity to influence the gross with their energy. So it's not that you have to be on the same level to assist others. You can just tune yourself to that particular frequency required for anybody's level, if to use that lousy word, or anybody's frequency, and you'll be able to assist them.